It's our own fault, isn't it? We all got too excited. We all got a bit carried away. Got caught up in the razzmatazz of smashing Man United 6-1 at Old Trafford. And now we're here back on Oh What A Night after Oh What A Blooming Shambles of the last 15 minutes of an evening, more than anything. I'm Ben Haynes. I'm joined today by Hunter Godson, Dan Kilpatrick and Jude Summerfield to try and dissect and take apart what was a really, really weird game. It was just bizarre. The Premier League continues to throw up these crazy afternoons and evenings, and unfortunately this time around it's us that's on the receiving end of the crazy and not on the good side of it. So let's start just by checking how everyone is. I'm assuming you're all sitting there feeling still like you've been punched in the gut and residual sort of pain from Sunday.
Yeah, I mean it was one of those where it does make you feel a bit sick. I sort of stood up as the ball was flying into the top corner, because my mum had said about 15 minutes before, she's like, oh, there's no way it can come back here, is there? And I was like, I'm not a big believer in all of that, but
leave the room, mum.
Yeah, was a bit like, thanks, mum. You could see my dad as well. My dad was like shooting absolute daggers at her. You know, neither of us believe in any of that, but when you say that sort of stuff, it does. I think as a Tottenham fan, maybe there's a different energy to it.
Yeah, that is so accurate. Dan, were you fairly directly behind that shot as well?
I was sort of parallel to it.
You had a tasty view.
Yeah, it was one of those moments that just seemed kind of slightly surreal, because it's more from a work perspective, to be honest. It was a bit like Amsterdam. I couldn't really enjoy that because you have to immediately kind of rip up your on the whistle piece and start again. I'd done this kind of great analysis, or in my mind it was great analysis piece, so I'd finished on about 80 minutes about how good Spurs look going forward, about how, you know, United and Liverpool would be watching with trepidation. Sorry, City and Liverpool would be watching with trepidation about how the midfield really worked. It was just an overwhelmingly positive piece, and I basically had to rip up everything and start again and say how mentally fragile Spurs were and et cetera, et cetera. So I just kind of watched it with this kind of sort of grim feeling that the next 10 minutes were going to be horrible in more ways than one.
I can't wait to get... I really am quite keen to get into that as well, because I think there's a really interesting discussion to be had around the idea of the starting 11 being really fit for purpose. And then once things sort of unfurl from there, it gets a little bit ropey and a little bit dicey. But we'll come on to it. Jude, what about you? Where were you at that time, and how did you experience it? Is there going to be security camera footage of you somewhere losing your rag, going absolutely bananas?
No, none of that this time, I don't think. I was just watching it with a few friends, so obviously they didn't make it much better at the final whistle. Just on the feeling, I've been trying to think of something that is sort of remotely like it, and all I can think of is that it's sort of like being dumped by someone by text when you had no idea anything was wrong.
Blindsided.
Yeah, so I was like really enjoying myself and thinking, this is all right. Obviously second half went a little downhill, and then suddenly just like that last shot that was just out of nothing, it was absolute worldy. I was just left with that awful feeling in your gut, and it's just I just had to.
What did I
get
do?
Just had to get out there as soon as I could. People were like going to me, like, so Jude, and I was going, what do you mean? I can't explain it. I can't help you out here.
But you know what? There's a Friends episode where Phoebe gets broken up with, and she says, I tried to write a song about the breakup, but I couldn't find anything that rhymed with is literally it in a nutshell. I was sitting there after the game and I was like, I can't actually describe the feeling. It's just so rubbish. Being so completely in control of the whole thing. And also, Dan, I'm assuming that in your analysis you probably went into the fact that at half time Jose Mourinho took foot off the gas, made the team a little bit more strategically and structurally sound, just looked to parry West Ham a little bit and then hit him on the counter as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think in some respects it was a completely inexplicable result, and in some respects it was reflective of what's going on in the wider Premier League, you know, all these crazy scorelines that seem to be a symptom of the schedule and the absence of fans and the just generally weird alien conditions. But then I think another part of me was like, well, this is Spurs and West Ham, and they kind of always serve up this kind of game. Like, it's not the first time this type of thing has happened. And it's not even the first time under Mourinho that Spurs have nearly let a 3-0 lead slip against West Ham. It was very similar to his first game. And I think even the year before that under Pochettino, Spurs were 3-0 up and let them back into the game as well. So you did wonder whether it was a symptom of the situation and the conditions, or whether it was just another mental Spurs-West Ham game.
There'd been four 3-2 results between Spurs and West Ham in the last sort of four or five years. So we've really been asking for a 3-all out of nowhere. And what was it last season? Or Mourinho's first game of last season, 3-0 up. And out of absolutely nothing, I know it was the last kick of the game that they made it 3-2, but really, they were dead for 85 minutes in that game. And we saw basically the same.
Well, that's it. It really wasn't dissimilar to that. So, even though it felt somewhat inexplicable, I think it was kind of almost par of the course for these two clubs. And I also think, as you alluded to, Ben, there were kind of reasons for it from a Spurs point of view as well. That they definitely were excessively self-confident in the second half. I think they thought the game was won. I think Mourinho made mistakes. I don't think his changes were particularly good, and I don't think the team's approach in the second half was particularly good. And then there were individual errors to boot, you know, the free kicks and obviously Sanchez. So it was hard to fathom immediately afterwards, but I think now the dust has settled, with a bit of time to reflect, there were reasons for it, and there were errors on Spurs' part, definitely.
So let's make it nice and easy. We'll do the good is the first half, the bad is the second half, the beautiful, we'll talk about some individual performances from Spurs players, and then the ugly, the individual performances of the players that maybe got it a little bit wrong. So that first half, Jude, was probably, at least the first 20 minutes, is as good as I've seen a Spurs side play in the last 2-3 years, if not a little bit more. Just break it down for me. What were your thoughts on that opening 20 minutes?
They were properly on it in that first, definitely in that first 10, where they were 2-0 up already. And then they got the goal about 6 minutes later. Sorry, I'm having to go from like 0 to 100 to be positive here. And I'm fine.
It's very difficult to do. Do you know what I tried to do today, dude? I tried to watch the highlights, but only the first 75 minutes. How tragic is that?
If you want to hear something really tragic, I've got a mate who I'm in a WhatsApp group with. It's a Spurs WhatsApp group. And he announced before the game that he was going to do what people occasionally do, completely turn off all social and watch it on Match of the Day, because he happened to be out in the afternoon.
Oh, no.
So the whole group afterwards just consoled themselves with the fact that, oh, well, Elliot's going to watch this on Match of the Day.
Sorry, Elliot.
And then he was just kind of re-added on Sunday morning. Sorry about that, mate.
Comes in swearing. That's awful.
Yeah, just like the way they play in the first half, they were good at setting traps for West Ham, I felt. I know the first goal was sort of a big long ball over a high line, but they seemed to nip the ball in good areas, and then in transition they were really, really quick. And yeah, if they've got Kane and Son up front linking up like that, they're going to be tough for anyone playing against them. So
have to enjoy that pass. It was such a good pass.
It was a ridiculous pass. And I know we've sort of known it for a while that he does that thing pretty regularly. It's sort of becoming wider knowledge now, because he's got 5 goals and 7 assists for the year already, which is like the assist is already his joint best for a season, I think, in the Prem, which is just outrageous.
We've moved on, haven't we? It was once high right back, and now it's Kane drops deep, which is a much more effective tactic, I have to say, than high right back. But Kane dropping into the 10 roll, his passing range is absolutely ridiculous.
It's obscene, like, isn't it?
Honestly, it's sickening watching a player who can also smash the ball in from pretty much everywhere on the pitch be that good at passing. I'm just glad we get to watch it.
We were getting the whole repertoire, weren't we, Hunter? We literally got everything you could have possibly wanted, really, from Harry Kane, with the exception of a hat-trick.
I think people were sort of pointing out that he made that block just before half time, sort of, back in the area. He was every ball from a corner, he seemed to be heading away from a West Ham corner. And then, yeah, at the other end of the pitch, a little nutmeg against Declan Rice.
And then,
you know, that came finish that we've seen hundreds of times where he just sort of, as soon as he lines that up on the edge of the area, I'm like, this is going in. If he gets a nice big swing at it, if he's not snatching at it, I'm always.
And it also doesn't, it's not like it screams into the top corner. It just beautifully bounces in, keeper no chance, just far enough away from him that he's not going to get near it, cross his body.
Yeah, he did. He basically had a couple of shots like that where I think he had one where Fabianski had to get down to it and he should have played Son in. But really, it was just like it was one of those days you felt like the more shots he took, the better. Just keep shooting, mate. You know, you're bound for these to go in. And then, you know, and then whatever happened.
And there was a point, I think it was 02-03, where Henri was clearly the best player in the world and he got the Premier League assist record as well as scoring loads of goals, which I think De Bruyne has now matched. And Kane is properly at that point now where he's going to be, if he stays fit, this is all with that caveat, but he's going to be one of the top scorers in the league and he's probably going to finish with the most assists, or he's going to be up there as well. It's just insane how good he is at the moment. Mm. He's probably the biggest attacking threat and one of the most creative players in the league at once. And I can't really remember anyone since Henri in those couple of years who can say that. Mm. It's really good to watch at the moment.
Dan, anything else in the first half that you were like, do you know what, this is just great to watch?
I mean, Ndombele was really fun to watch, I thought, in the first half. It was all about Kane and Son, really. I thought all three goals were just such good goals. They were just quality goals. All three of them just well-crafted. There was so much to enjoy in all three of them. But the midfield was really working well. I mean, Sissoko was kind of doing his thing and Højbjerg was doing his thing. And either side of Ndombele, who was just... It was just fun to watch him. Like, he was just doing Ndombele things, and he was also getting stuck in, and you could tell that he was just enjoying his football. And I think if it wasn't for the general craziness and for Kane and Son and Bale returning, then he would be the story of the season by far.
Yeah.
It's kind of just for other factors that he's not.
Yeah. I think Regulon deserves a shout out as well. I thought he was absolutely excellent in that first half, especially, but defensively as well. You know, his cross for that Kane second goal was perfect, and it's something I'm still to get used to as a fullback who can cross.
Oh, you're gonna mock Gentle Ben, aren't you?
Consistently. Gentle Ben had a surprisingly ungentle cross, is what I'll say, in that he almost certainly always overhit it, or I became very used to him.
Are you forgetting four assists in two games from Gentle Ben?
Sure, look, he's up. He's certainly had some crossing training with Regulon, but but yeah, I just thought it was brilliant, and it's such an asset to have a wing back who's that quick, and he is that quick. Like, seeing him, his recoveries were part of the reason we could deal with West Ham's wing backs. He can eat 50 yards up to get across so quickly, which I think is going to be vital. And I thought it was brilliant.
Let's do the second half then. Let's do the bad bits, and let's probably steer clear of the individual bits that we didn't like. So we'll do that in the ugly, but. From a sort of strategic point of view, Dan, what were you looking at and thinking, do you know what, that doesn't sit hugely well with me?
It was just really passive. And there was a interview from Declan Rice on the West Ham website that I picked up for the paper in the morning, where he just sort of said, we felt like toward the end of the first half that we could get back in the game. And we said at halftime, if we get a goal, we're well in this, because Spurs had started sitting off us. And that was... absolutely right. It just felt like at 3-0 Spurs thought it was game over, and I think 9 times out of 10 they would have been right, but the problem is this is a big game for West Ham, we know that, and as I've alluded to, these clubs tend to produce kind of crazy scorelines. So it was really frustrating that Spurs didn't go for the jugular and try and score 6 again like they did against United. It was just a different attitude to the United game, where you felt like Spurs were going to keep going for it and be relentless and make United suffer. I think against West Ham, the attitude was more, okay, we've done this, it's in the bag, now let's conserve energy. Maybe that was with the Europa League game in mind, because United, they were going into an international break. I don't know if that was affected the mindset, but it just felt like there was a different mentality there. And West Ham obviously sensed that. And as soon as they got one goal, I think they sensed that it was too late for Spurs to kind of switch it back on, effectively. And it was them that went for the jugular. And as I said, 9 times out of 10, Spurs would have got away with it. It really was a kind of 1 in 100 effort from Lanzini. But you know, these things happen if you kind of switch off and go into kind of passive mode.
Mm. Yes, spot on, basically, isn't it? There were moments where, like, the ball would get ferried out to Aurier and he'd stand on it for 10, 15 seconds. Not even... He'd turn back, take a touch and stand still. And then he'd play it to Sissoko and he'd do the same thing. And you sort of felt like, guys, this isn't enough, because we've never had the players, and these are the same players who have never been able to manage a game. Well, not effectively manage a game. So... yeah, it was that thing of clearly they had been told slow the game down. You know, we'll sit in when we don't have the ball. They can just have possession. But you know, West Ham were our team in form. They've come into this game with a lot of confidence. I think it was maybe not naive, but yeah, maybe a bit arrogant to just suggest that there's no way they could possibly break down an incredibly shaky centre back pairing of and. You know, I think Mourinho's going to learn more about the team over time and what he can and can't do. I don't think that he'll take too much from this. He'll see it as a freak rather than a sort of we can't do that, play like that in the future. But, you know, I'm with Dan. I would have liked to have seen... I think if we carried on playing the same way, West Ham don't get anywhere near to coming back in, I have to say.
Am I doing the defence a disservice, Jude, when I say that it was... starkly obvious just how much better our attack is than our defence, or is it actually like a little bit more that we've got players that are world class in the forward line and maybe the defence is just slightly lesser?
Well, I mean, if you could give Harry like some players who even like half his ability in defence, then we probably would have won that game. I can't get over how these crosses or these weak free kicks we seem to be giving away, and now it's becoming a pattern, like it happened against Everton.
That's a really good point.
And Newcastle as well. They keep giving away these silly little free kicks, and then they just can't clear them properly. Obviously, that Lanzini goal is like a freak of nature. Oh, that guy, he loves the Spurs game.
He loved
as well.
It. Yeah, he loved it. Yeah, he did.
He's so like, that rat needs to like just get out. He needs to be binned off somewhere, because I can't have him just coming in and then scoring one goal a season and it being against Spurs.
It's such a swing for me. I know it's an amazing goal, but it's such a swinger.
No, you can't take away from it, because he means for it to go in the goal and that's it.
100%.
He kicks the ball to his side.
100%. But it's like Dan said, it's there 99 times out of 100 for it to be postage like that. It's just. Like,
yeah,
it kills you seeing that go in at that game at that time. Wish he could have done it like Mandzukic, do it like to make it 4-1. Do you know what I mean? Not do it at 3-2 in the 94th minute.
So just
the
for them,
Gareth,
it was so perfect that it kind of hit the stanch and came down. Yeah. There was almost a split second as well. We thought it hadn't gone over the line. Like, oh, Spurs can clear this.
Yeah.
It just couldn't have been better for them, really, in terms of the way it happened.
But Jude, you're absolutely right. Up to that point, it's errors, and it's minor errors that leading to goals and individual mistakes. Like the fact, and in ways arrogance, like the fact that Sissoko doesn't feel like he needs to go and challenge for the ball. That's worrying. A player of his age and experience not jumping to win a header in the area. Aurier still not learning that you can't just go through the back of a player, whether you win the ball or not. You can't just dive in, you know, especially in those areas where we've been losing possession. Players refusing to just clear their lines. That is a, especially at that point in the game, I think the Aurier free kick that he gives away for the second, was it the second goal or the first goal? Anyway, the free kick he gives away that leads to Lanzini goal, the first touch he takes before giving the free kick away should just be a massive boot.
Yeah.
But it should be clear your lines. There's 30 seconds left, but he takes a touch, then the guy gets around him, and then he it's that thing that top defenders say they don't do. If you make the first mistake, make sure you never make the second mistake. And what Aurier's, I mean, it was the very worst of him, I'd say.
Just jockey. You don't need to do it. I think, Jude, your point about not learning is the kicker, isn't it? It's like, it's literally happened to us 3 weeks ago against Newcastle.
Yeah, I think the Newcastle one was a little weird as well. Like, I've seen clips of it before and it didn't really look like a foul, but it got given.
That was never a foul, I have to say, Hainsey. Yeah. That was never a foul in a million years.
But like, even but so, it's like the same sort of angle that these free kicks are being delivered from. And it's resulted in like three goals.
But even so, it's like a maturity thing where you don't even give the referee an option to...
No, I'm not having that one. The Newcastle one, you've got to go and watch it again, guys. He literally throws himself.
That one was
I can't. I can't remember. Yeah, I can't. I can't remember. Was it Højbjerg?
Yeah, it was Højbjerg.
He got thrown over by Joel Linton. Yeah. But the point is that we lauded Lamela for being smart enough to get Martial sent off. Equally, we now need to look and say Aurier that in that situation he was just not intelligent enough. Right. And what even though it was an awful decision, a Højbjerg decision, the fact is we conceded from that. So you know you need to be like on job and not like messing around at that point of that game. Like just be a little bit sharper, a little bit smarter. And I think Doherty is. I think Doherty in that situation doesn't make that error. And again, if it's a little bit critical to single out an individual because there's a million different takes and opinions on the individuals that are responsible. But I just it pains me to think that at 3-2, you're giving away an opportunity for the opposition to come 20 yards into your half and swing one into the box. And they've got a lot of physical and tall players.
I think it's worrying, though, that Mourinho doesn't pick Doherty. Is it,
he played three times for Ireland in the break.
There you go. That's why he didn't pick Doherty.
Yeah. I think he would have picked, obviously, albeit Aurier played well at United, but I think he would have done. It's probably just a fatigue thing. I mean, I think we kind of know what Aurier can do now. We didn't learn anything new about him on Sunday. I think if Spurs are playing a back three, which could happen, and you know, you put Davis in there, for instance, with two of them, then I'd be fine with Aurier being on the right and Reguilon being on the left. But in a four, we've known forever that he's prone to that kind of error.
Okay, beautiful bits. And this is a really interesting question, and I'm desperate to know all of your opinions on this because I'm sure there'll be a split here. Gareth Bale's return, both beautiful and ugly. Is there any part of you that was sitting there like, oh, not just yet? Or like, why did he bring him on just then? Because for me, I was completely wrapped up in the story. And annoyingly, I think people have almost middle stumped me by saying like, yeah, you were wrapped up in the story and bringing Gareth Bale on was part of the story. You know, he didn't have to come on there.
I think it's easy to say with hindsight, but I do think with hindsight, the Bale sideshow contributed to what happened at the end. I think it was a bit of a distraction. It was another kind of show of hubris, really, me bringing him on. Look, it was a show of strength. You know, look what we can do. We can put Bale on when we're 3-0 up and we're cruising here. And there was almost kind of too much emphasis, I guess, on that front three for 10 minutes and how glorious it was. And I think, really, maybe even Mourinho got caught up in it as well, because you know, if we're being honest, Mourinho is a conservative coach first and foremost. And again, it's so easy with hindsight, but you know, why not put Ben Davis on and go to a back five and just see it out for 20 minutes? I mean, that would have probably secured the points. But yeah, you know, I suppose it'd gone on to win 3-0, and Bale had got 20 minutes in his legs, and we'd all be saying, "Great, you know, bring on Lask on Thursday." So it is just one of those that you can look back on, but given what happened, I do think that it was probably a bit of a distraction.
It's a really weird thing that like, if say Bale was going to be like the third sub instead of, I can't remember which one, I think he might have been the first player brought on,
him and Winks came on together,
but if like if it had just gone to 3-1 or something like that, we had made all our subs in that game, so Mourinho was a little bit hamstrung, wasn't he? All he could really do was just sort of watch it all unfold. And if it had been 3-1, there's no doubt that I don't think there's any doubt that someone like Ben Davis might have come on.
So but basically, agreeing with what Dan says there, a bit of arrogance in that we're 3-0 up, we're going to bring on this superstar, look at us. And that all that seemed to do is spur on West Ham to be like, yeah, right, okay, well, we're going to come out and we're going to try and drag this back. I think what you've both said is true. I think hindsight's 20/20. We can say, but we were 3-0 up. We were under some pressure, but we were going to carry on playing the same way. So why not bring on one of the best players, you know, in running in behind in the world and carry on trying to get in behind on a counter-attack. You know, hindsight, maybe we should have brought on even... I thought Harry Kane looked done at about 70 minutes because he'd run himself so hard. And I thought, why not bring on the young guy, the big young guy, and let him have a charge round for 20 minutes, you know, put some pressure on the midfield too, who by the end, Rice and Suchet were just sort of running the game. We weren't getting anywhere near them. But this is all hindsight. I wanted, when he came on, I was really excited and, you know, just didn't work out.
If he scores, when he, like, I think the thing I'll take from it is that he picked up the ball 80 yards from the opponent's goal, ran the length of the field, still had enough in the tank to drift through two challenges. And then, but for a little nudge that he gets from Yarmolenko, he feeds that into the corner. I still think he should have gone to the other side. Mm. But if that goes in, we're all now sitting here saying Spurs are going to win the league. Oh my God, we've got Gareth Bale. It's the fine margins, isn't it? It's the difference between you now going away and being like, watch out Liverpool, watch out Man City. Mm. And us now and sitting here, well, maybe just a little asterisk again.
And you. Will have noticed this, I'm sure, Ben, but like being in the stadium for his return was a good moment, but it was one of those moments where you really, really miss fans. Like, it would have been really something to bring Bale on at 3-0 up against West Ham with a full stadium. Mm. And when he came on and immediately stood over the free kick, you could feel the tension just in the press box, just from people thinking, oh my God, imagine if he slams this into the top corner. Like, everyone just... And I can't imagine what it would have been like with kind of 65,000 fans all feeling the same thing. It was really a game, you know, likewise, the West Ham fans who had stayed, you know, it would have been limbs at the end for them. It was really a game. And again, when Spurs scored the third goal, I can't imagine... the atmosphere in the stadium for kind of 65 minutes would have been special as well. So it was really a game to mourn the absence of fans, I thought.
Yeah.
One thing I do just want to pick up on Gareth Bale, and I don't know if this came across on TV because I haven't watched it back properly, but did you notice, Dan, that he was absolutely smoked? Like, he literally was burnt out after that run. That he clearly is fit, but he's not match sharp.
So I probably had my head buried in my laptop at this point, trying to write my piece about Spurs winning the title.
So he was blowing.
On TV, it came across empty. The camera stayed with him after the miss, and he looked knackered. Yeah, he was like huffing big time. But that part of that sort of, I was like, that's Bale when he's sort of way off it. That's what I thought. He's just run 80 yards and he's put it round two Premier League defenders and got through. And I was like, you know, it's going to take time. We knew we were getting a player who hadn't played properly for months. We knew what we were sort of signing up for. And plus, the fitness team at Spurs have said the same thing, that he's going to take time. Like, he's fit. The man can play football. But don't expect like a starter every week. And so, yeah, that glimpse was enough for me to think, brilliant, great to have him back. And, you know, the miss hurt. But even then, at that point, I was like, well, there's only 2 minutes to go, or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly. Literally no two chance. Minutes. God. So. Right, let's do the ugly bits. So there's three things that I want to pick out here, and I want to get your takes on it, because I think it'd be easy to overreact about any one of them individually. So Sanchez for the own goal, which I thought was a bit unlucky. I also think potentially you're looking at Sissoko and Sanchez on the defending from the free kick. I also think you might be looking at Lucas Moura for his part that he played with the ball down the left-hand side, where he just sort of gently turned around and left the runner off his shoulder. And then finally, finally, Harry Winks.
Sorry, I shouted that at my dad. as what, he went round him, I went, you can't just let him run. And he just let him run.
He
and
just,
I was
he just sort of turned fuming. And was like, oh.
Anyway, we'll get into
it. Oh, God, he's gone.
Yeah.
And then Harry Winks, who I actually feel the most amount of sympathy for, and I probably should have the least amount of sympathy for, because everyone is raging about the fact that he tried to take this weird half controlled touch, half clearance, and not really do anything with it. When everything, every fibre of your being is saying, just blast that, Harry, just smash it away. And I think, if I was going to be hypercritical, I think there is a touch of the Pochettino fibres still running through him. Do you know what I mean? He's not, like, there is still an element of him trying to do just a little bit too much. So feel free to go hippie free-for-all here. Were there any of those in particular that you thought jumped ahead of any others?
I mean, I'd take Sanchez, because I do think long before the own goal, I picked him out as the weak link, not just in the defence, but in the whole team. I think he had a really bad afternoon. He hasn't had many good afternoons, which is the problem, I think. And he doesn't look at all comfortable playing on the left side of the centre-backs. He's really shaky at clearing crosses from the right. So it actually wasn't a huge surprise that the end goal came the way it did, because he just doesn't look comfortable clearing anything with his left foot, which obviously you have to do from that side if the cross is coming from the right. So it wasn't a great surprise that he kind of was a bit out of position and went for it with his head. And it ended up in the back of our net. Again, it was 9 times out of 10, you probably get away with that. But he was an accident waiting to happen, I think. And I do think Mourinho is going to bin him off eventually. I mean, it's an odd situation where, you know, Mourinho picks him out as the weak link in the Europa League final in 2017 for Ajax, and, you know, picks him out as the player to target. And then, you know, a few years down the line, ends up kind of having to rely on him as one of his key defenders. I don't think, like, that's a situation that Mourinho's loving. He's not great on the ball, and he gets out of jail a lot, I think, with his one-on-one defending, which isn't bad, but I think he just hasn't improved enough. So I do suspect that he'll kind of gradually slip out of contention, and maybe Rodon, if Mourinho likes him, could kind of compete with Dier and Alderweireld to play there.
It would be an incredible situation, wouldn't it, if we were in January, still in with a shout at the title, if we're still in and around those places at the top of the table, and once again we're left with a really clear foundation of knowledge that one or two signings could make the difference to see whether the club do it this time. Because it's so abundantly obvious where we need to strengthen, isn't it?
Yeah, someone said on Twitter that Spurs feel a bit Liverpool pre-Van Dijk, which I think is something I agree with. You know, it does feel like if you were to add a really top-class centre-back into the squad now, then that would be the final piece of the puzzle that, you know, Mourinho's talked about.
Mm. Does that exist, though, Dan, do you think? Does that Van Dijk-esque centre-back exist at the moment?
Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Spurs quite liked the look of Skriniar. But he was overpriced. I know they really liked Ruben Dias, but they were never going to be able to compete with City. So, I mean, it's obvious that that's where Mourinho wants to upgrade. It's no secret that he'll try and do that. And I don't know. I guess that in January they will, you know, speak to Jorge Mendes and you know, look around and see who's available and see what can be done. And as Hainji says, particularly if it's looking good in the Europa League or Premier League or FA Cup at that point, then it'll be really interesting to see if they go for it.
I saw someone make quite an interesting point about Sanchez. It's that in this current market state, you know, swaps and swap deals are more and more popular, and using him as a make weight becomes now, I think, quite a good option for us because he's still quite young. He's just not improving. And when we signed him, he played in a three with Alderweireld and Vertonghen, and you thought, oh, he looks quite decent. But I think that was sort of papered over by the fact that he didn't have to do much passing. He wasn't on the ball that much, and we basically used him as a right back to cover that space, which he's brilliant at. That's where he's at his strongest, where he's, you know, he's going one and one in those sort of battles. Now that he's on the ball, especially on his left foot, he doesn't look comfortable on his right foot. And you used to see it last year. Teams would sort of press our front line and allow him possession so that he'd know he'd play an overhit ball, basically,
but not just that Hunter.
Yeah.
Do you remember they were pressing him onto his left foot?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does feel like we're sort of, it's kind of harsh. The guy's never been good at it, and he's sort of being asked to sort of step in and do that. I haven't seen the improvement that I think, well, certainly I expected, and Spurs obviously expected it as well. He just seems to be, he's just leveling out, isn't he? He just seems like quite a mediocre centre-back who might work in a three. But, I mean, ask me, do I think he's much better than Juan Foyt, who we've let go? No, I don't think he's much better than Juan Foyt.
The problem is that Spurs mainly now have centre-backs. Almost all of them, I would say, look better in a three. And I'm including Ben Davis in that.
Yeah.
I would think Alderweireld, given his slight decrease in mobility in the last few years, is probably better in a three. I think Dier definitely is. I think Sanchez is. So you wonder how often Mourinho will use that. The problem with it is, I think now, there's six players who you want in the team if they're fit. Lo Celso, Højbjerg, Ndombele, Bale, Son, Kane, and possibly Bergwijn or Lamela, depending on the opposition. So it really feels like we'd lose something in the front six by going to that system. So it kind of Mourinho's back to that kind of blanket that if he pulls up too high, he gets cold feet, and if he pulls it over his feet, he gets a cold neck or whatever.
Cold,
you know,
nipples.
We're sort of back to balancing it out, which is why a centre, really top quality centre back, would make such a big difference.
Do we think we'll see Ben Davis in a back four ever as a centre back, a left sided centre back?
It's been mooted, hasn't it? But there's never been any suggestion from Mourinho that he thinks that's an option. You know, I still think Ben Davis is the backup left back, and you do need two left backs you know, when you're playing the Europa League. So I can't see it, but I could definitely see him being the kind of first pick at left centre half in a three.
It's worked. It's worked for Wales.
You know what was really tough seeing is conceding from free kicks and corners and just lumps into the box. That's where you're looking at your centre backs and being like, guys, this is the bit where you should just gobble it up. Do you know what I mean? And seeing particularly the header to make it 3-1 just felt like it gave West Ham, like it opened the door ajar, didn't it? Suddenly it was like, oh, maybe if everything goes their way and you get a couple of rubs of the green, perhaps they come back into it. And I'm amazed. Well, I'm not amazed, but I think for Jose Mourinho, the type of coach that he is, that will sit really, really uncomfortably with him. And that'd be something that he'll be looking to rectify very, very quickly. And I suppose that's one good thing that we have got, is that we now go and play Lask on Thursday. And I've got a game where you can try and put things right immediately at home as well. So not a lot of travel. Who are you looking forward to seeing, Jude, on Thursday?
Well, Bale might get a few more minutes. I mean, it'd be nice if Winks could have a good game after what happened. Probably Carlos Vinicius, to be honest. A player I haven't seen much of at all, apart from Welcome to Tottenham, YouTube compilations, that sort of thing. So yeah, that'd be, yeah, probably him, I'd say.
I think the sooner we can start betting in Joe Roden, if he's not going to go out on loan, the sooner we can start betting him.
You can't play in the
Yeah, he was a bit too late in signing.
He was too late for the signing. Well, not Joe Roden.
He did train, though. The good thing is that he did train with the team. So they did a mini session off the back of full time.
Yeah.
And he was in the training group. So,
well, look, I think the sooner you start betting him into squad, the better, because there's not a massive gulf in class between our centre-backs now. There's not like, oh, it wasn't like 4 years ago when it was like Alderweireld, Vertonghen, it's not even a question. It's now, you know, it might be Dier, it might be Sanchez, it might be Alderweireld. They all sort of at similar levels, to be quite honest with you. And Alderweireld losing the yard of pace like he currently is, I think this season we're seeing it sort of worse than last season, almost not in as dramatic a style as Vertonghen, but definitely more noticeable. I think there's a gap. And if it, you know, a lot of people have been saying, you know, give Dier time, he can become that. But I think it's great, Joe Roden in there. You know, I've heard so many positive things said about him, obviously not playing at this level, but he's very combative by the sound of it. And, you know, if you want someone to be winning headers in the area, which at the moment none of our centre-backs are doing, I think it would be nice to start seeing him sort of on the bench or in for certain matchday squads.
I think Lo Celso also trained. Yeah, Delhi was training as well. Lo Celso was in the sort of 6-7 aside that they did, wasn't he, Dan?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the good thing about Thursday is that we have a free weekend, so it's Burnley's not till Monday. Though. Actually, if Mourinho wants to give some of the guys that didn't cover themselves in glory in the second half, you know, a chance to put it right, then he can. Mm-hmm. He can go completely full strength without too many concerns. I mean, I think, as Jude says, I'd like to see Delhi. I think the only way, you know, as Mourinho's made quite clear, he's not a good trainer, apparently. So the only way he gets back in is by, you know, doing it on the pitch, and he needs opportunities. And, you know, so I would like to see him given a chance. Mm. I think I'd quite like to see Lo Celso and Ndombele, because we just haven't had a chance to see them in tandem yet. Mm. I've not really got a clear idea of how that would work, because one of them always seems to be injured or rested. So a kind of midfield three of, you know, including, or midfield four, including those three, I think it would be something I'd like to see from the start. But then I guess there's got to be a bit of rotation, and yeah, Bale and Vinicius up front would be interesting.
Kane with his legs up, that's what I'd like to see. But it doesn't seem like, I mean, the man just wants to score goals. Literally, every single day, the man just wants to score goals. But really, he just, come on, it's Lask. Lads, it's Lask.
Lads, it's Lask.
Lads, it's Lask.
just to finish up, I do want to know, like, now that the dust has settled, like Dan said, is it as doom and gloom as you felt? Or do you still feel like you can loop Spurs in with the other group of teams that are pushing for the title? Hunter, I'll throw you under the bus and come to you first here.
Look, it's going to be open this season. I think, you know, a lot's been said about Virgil van Dijk's injury this week, but obviously that damages Liverpool to no end. We saw them before Dijk, as Dan said, they looked like us. They looked shaky at the back and brilliant going forward. And I think, you know, what are we with, what, 5-6 points off the top? You can make, you know, it's 5 games in. We're still absolutely in it. There's no way we're out of it. And I was so, I have to say, watching City play Arsenal at the weekend, I kept thinking was, neither of these teams are world beaters anymore. City, I think if Arsenal had come out and tried to push City a little bit harder in the second half, I think they could have got something there. And all, you know, they're a team in transition, especially at the back. Liverpool have lost their main centre-back. Arsenal, you know, are no better than... Chelsea are still, you know, conceding 3 like us. Like, it's wide open. So, yeah, we're still in it for me.
Jude?
I hate throwing Spurs into title conversations because nothing good ever comes of it. Like, I think people started talking it up 18-19 when we'd had an amazing start and we were at home to Wolves, and yeah,
was
we
it
lost
Christmas.
Yeah, that was around Christmas time. Yeah. And it was sort of like the day before, they're there for the title, the day after, nah. No, that was never on.
Jamie Carragher did that, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just Jamie Carragher, yeah. Talked us up.
I don't think Spurs are any, or, you know, have performed any worse than the teams around them, like Hunter says, but it's just that as soon as you put Tottenham and title in the same sentence, bad juju happens.
I've done that many times this week, just... I'm afraid. I agree with Hunter. I think there were more positives than negatives from Sunday, definitely. I disagree with Hunter in that I don't think Mourinho will take it as a kind of freak result that you can't learn anything from. I think it was a proper lesson. And I know that that's always what players say in the mix zone, you know, we'll learn from this, blah, blah, blah. But I do think it was a genuine kind of lesson that Spurs don't, you know, they can't afford to have that arrogance yet. They're not there yet. And I think they will take something from it. So I honestly think any team that can sort it out defensively and can put together a kind of a really solid run of, you know, 10, 11 wins in you know, 14, 15 games, something like that. I think any team that does that is going to be in with a great shout of winning the title. And Spurs are definitely capable of that, given the way Kane and Son are playing. And if you add Bale and a fit Lo Celso and Ndombele to the mix, I mean, it is really exciting. So, yeah, I'd definitely put them in the mix. But everyone, Spurs included, just got to sort it out defensively, basically.
And just to end on a high, it looks like Son's going to sign his new contract in this week, which is lovely, right? Or today, or the end of tomorrow. So, yeah, brilliant news. So, amazing one to tie down. And he deserves all that bloody money. Probably not, yeah, but there you 100%. Go.
Well, look, it's a nice positive note to end on. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have, please do leave us a rating and a review. And we'll be back next week, where hopefully Spurs have just banged Lask and then smashed Burnley, and I'm ready to move towards the top of the table again. Yeah, do make sure that you subscribe if you haven't already, and we'll see you all next time.